Welcome back to the Caught Red podcast. We are your hosts. I'm Jesse Light.
I'm Megan Light.
We're just two dog lovers talking about true crime, horror movies, and most likely our dogs, too. Not much new going on at the Lighthouse this past week. We did go see the new Ghostbusters movie.
Yeah, we did.
It was so good.
I love it. I'll go see it again.
Oh, for sure. I loved Afterlife.
And again and again and again until I know it.
And I loved this one. Yeah. I wish there was more quirky jokes by the little girl, but it's all
right. They're more grown. It was more of a serious movie.
Podcast was really good. The little marshmallow guys always
Stay Puffs
make us smile. So
that'll be my next tattoo. I've already decided.
I loved Bill Murray, as always, even though he wasn't in there a long time.
Tall, dark, and horny.
Yes. Gosh. I liked the Firemaster.
Oh, he's great.
So funny. I forget his name. He's a comedian, but...
I can't think of his name either. I want to say Kumar, but that's real generic. Because he used to not be all beefy and meaty like that. He used to be kind of like scrawny and goofy looking. And then he was in some sort of a Marvel's movie and he got real real fit for it.
Yeah, I'm not pronouncing that name. Kumail Nanjiani.
Sure.
That guy.
He was great. Very funny.
The Big Sick is what I know him from, I think. Other than that, we've kind of just been anticipating the eclipse that's about to go through Arkansas Monday.
That's why we're a day late. We decided to go grocery shopping.
Just in case all the crazies go and steal all the bread and milk. And
there was a lot of like junky food gone, like chips and stuff like that.
Because all the parties that they're going to be throwing.
Yeah, great.
All the festivals. It's just going to be insane.
Apparently, gassed up all of our cars.
Apparently, there's going to be a million more people coming through Arkansas. All the hotels are booked out. All the camping sites are reserved.
Bullshit.
We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes.
All the out-of-state license plates on the road. I will say, I know a guy that works for the roads. It's like I think he's a civil engineer. Is that what that's called?
Sure.
For like AR DOT or whatever. Mm-hmm. But he's going to be out with gas and water just in case. Like,
if some people are stuck somewhere.
Yeah.
My gosh. Yeah, because we're supposed to have ridiculous amount of traffic. Like, you're not supposed to go driving on Monday because you're just going to be stonewalled. Yeah. But we'll see how it goes.
We'll see.
We will see. Hopefully. Hopefully not. Hopefully it'll be just another normal Monday with a bit of darkness in the middle of the day, and then we'll go about our lives.
I'm not getting any glasses.
I'm not.
Couldn't care less.
I'm not staring into the sun or lack thereof sun.
I don't see the hype.
I think if it wasn't all going down where we are, it'd be a little cooler, but I, for one, am so tired of hearing about the eclipse and what's going to happen and all the parties, like you were saying.
Yeah, it's been going on for months.
Okay.
And it's like...
And it's supposed to be cloudy and perhaps rainy, so we'll see how that goes.
That would be funny. I think it's supposed to clear up, actually.
Oh, really?
But, you know, they're having the festivities down the street from us. And they're having like the circus and people on the like the high
trapeze.
Could
you?
And I couldn't think of the word, but it was so dang windy today. I can't imagine them if that happens this weekend. There's no way they're gonna get up there. They're gonna fall 100 feet to their death.
Oh, that'd be a sight to see.
Yeah. So
there's enough wrecks that happen along that street. I can't imagine. More ambulances and police cars.
True that. Megan's got a case for us today.
I do.
Take it away.
Well, fine. I have quite a few sources. but I kind of condensed them down a little bit. My sources are my own bookshelf, because I read a book that inspired me to look this case up. Then there is a series that I watched on Amazon. It's free through Showtime, but we don't have Showtime, so I bought the 4 episodes. It was like $7. It's called Love Fraud. There is a blog called Scott the Crook Smith.
I was wondering where that $7 charge came from.
That was on mine, hush. You got a free $20 out of it. I didn't know how much it was going to be. I was like, here, love, take my money. I have a couple of articles from Refinery29, several articles from Oxygen.com, TheGuardian.com, Vulture Magazine, Oprah Daily, Town and Country Magazine, Heavy.com, and USA Today.
Oprah Daily, huh?
Yeah. Sorry about that one. And I don't know if I've ever done an episode that someone like didn't die or go missing, but today is the day.
What?
Yeah, I know. I'm so sorry. So the book on my bookshelf that I read that I was like, huh, that'd be kind of cool to look into is called Stone Cold Fox by Rachel Collar Croft.
You're a Stone Cold Fox.
Ooh, baby, I love you too. Well, with that being said, what a Stone Cold Fox is someone who is attractive, sexually, physically, all the things. Yeah, baby. This book is about a woman who spent her whole life alongside her mother conning others, mainly swindling men out of everything they have and own. The main character meets the man of her dreams and wants to stop her life in the conning business, but it's not that easy with her past and her past relationships. And it was fun, and that's, like I said, I was like, huh, wouldn't it be interesting if I could look up con men or con women and do an episode about them? And that's how I came across today's story. And it's nothing new. Some of you may have watched the series I mentioned or heard about him on other podcasts. And we don't do a lot of reality TV in this house, but I think watching Love Fraud is probably one of the only things reality-wise, even though it's a couple years old and I don't really count like, you know, Forensic Files or anything like that, you know, like in real time kind of shows as reality TV.
That's not reality TV.
Yeah.
I guess, would Cops be considered reality TV?
I think so. I love Cops. The story has it all. Love, betrayal, a bounty hunter. What I learned from all of this is that you don't mess with or cross-scorn women. Kind of like the ending of season 4 of True Detective, so if you know, you know. There is a famous quote by William Congreve in 1697 from his play The Mourning Bride. The first part, you don't really hear that often, but you'll recognize the second bit, I bet. It goes, "Heaven has no rage like love to hatred turned, nor hell a fury like a woman scorned."
I've never heard that.
Wait, what?
All of it, no.
The second half of it typically is heard as hell hath no fury like a woman scorned, but that is just an alteration of the actual wording. You've never heard that?
I don't think so.
Well, don't mess with a woman you've pissed off.
That makes sense.
It was hard to figure out where to start. So I'm going to give you a gist of it all to like give an idea of what today's going to be about. And then I'll get into some of the meat of it. Richard Scott Smith, or if he went by one of his several aliases like Rick, Scott, Mickey, Potsy, Scooter.
Dick. No.
Never went by that, but that's a very appropriate name for him.
Richard. Dick. I've never understood why that's short for Richard.
Me either. We have this guy that orders at the restaurant, and his name... his name is Richard, and the last name is V-A-G-T-S or Z, so it's like Dick Vads.
Dick Vag.
Isn't that funny, though? It's really unfortunate. And he orders every once in a blue moon. I hope he didn't listen to this.
Well, I just always wonder about parents naming their kids and they just don't think about the repercussions.
We have a John Johnson, which is kind of funny to me, too, because it's like almost like repeating the same thing. Anyhow, this guy, there's just something about him that makes women swoon over him. For about 30 years, this man has managed to win the hearts of numerous women, but sadly, it's all for his own selfish gain. He leaves them high and dry with a broken heart. One day, one of the many women he would con decided to start a blog in 2014. And it's one of the sources I listed, Scott the Crook Smith. She puts it all out there. And slowly over time, more of the women that he conned would discover this blog. The women would seek out other women that he was dating and inform them of who Smith was, adding to their team.
What's that one that you and Hannah follow on Facebook?
Are you dating the same guy?
Yeah, so
are
it's
you
like
dating
that.
This guy? Kinda. Yes. Yeah. Yes. They come together like a force to be reckoned with. Their ultimate goal is to bring this man down. Richard Scott Smith was born on February 22nd, 1971. He had a different sort of upbringing than most of us. He was taken in by his grandparents because his mother was abusive towards him. His dad was an alcoholic. And I'm assuming that it was his dad's parents because his mother's mom and grandmother committed suicide together and lit their house on fire when Smith's mother was really young. And of course, she was never the same after that. Smith would stay with him until he was 9 when his mom came skipping back into his life. She was visiting them during Christmas and then she just took off with him and she cut them off from the world, their loved ones. They had no idea where they went, no forwarding addresses, no phone number, no nothing. They just disappeared. It is unknown what happened over the course of those years of his life. I don't know how often Smith saw or was with his dad. His dad would divorce his mom sometime during those 9 years. But according to Smith, his dad remarried multiple times, having several more children. Smith said that he would feel unseen and unwanted, like he didn't exist. One of his many stepmothers would practically starve him and lock him in his room. She would beat him. Even when he talks about it, Smith lied so often, it would be hard to know whether or not he was being exactly truthful. What we do know about him growing up comes from his own mouth. Again, take that with a grain of salt. His aunts, Katie and Kimmy, little sister Tony, and then former high school best friend Gary. His aunt Katie reconnected with Smith on Facebook. Her and her sister were excited about this reunion with Scotty, which is what they would call him growing up. They used his middle name, kind of like my brother, Scott, but he's nothing like this man. My brother is far better. Smith would work his magic even on his family, sweet-talking and manipulating his own blood. As his Aunt Kimmy said on Love Fraud, he has a way to make people believe that he's sincere. And then he does a really scumbaggy kind of move. When his uncle is in the hospital, Smith jumped in to help out to take some of the burden off his aunts. He takes over as power of attorney to help his uncle transition to a living facility, but only so Smith could have his uncle's house. He was very fast to sell off family heirlooms and possessions. Smith had the family pretty much fighting each other, turning on one another. His Aunt Katie said, "You know, I may hate him for all these things, but I wouldn't have gotten in so deep if I hadn't thought I loved him." His sister Tony and him share the same mother. She is his little sister by 20 years.
Wow.
Yeah. She said that when she was 12, their mother passed away and she went to live with her brother. Tony saw firsthand him with all these different women like a revolving door. Smith would go even as far as using his little sister in his act, saying that she was his daughter and that would help gain trust of some of these women. Behind closed doors, he would belittle her and verbally abuse her, probably talking to her like he had been from their own mother or one of his stepmothers. And it wasn't long until he would become violent towards her. His ex-best friend, Gary, said he dropped out of high school as a junior. And he said even back then, Smith thought he was hot stuff, manipulating girls, having multiple girlfriends. He said, quote, he thought it would be cool to see how many girls he could date at the same time and not get caught, end quote.
Sounds like a lot of work to me.
Dude, just wait. Honestly, with his past childhood, these women are lucky that he didn't turn out to be like a serial killer. He's just a sleazeball. If you look up the definition for sociopath or narcissist in your handy dandy Webster's, it would not shock me in the least bit if his face or mugshot is right next to those words. This man's sociopathy is clearly present with each woman that he takes advantage of. For someone whose own Aunt Katie said was raised to know from right to wrong or from wrong to right, he obviously forgot it over the years. Smith downright ignores the feelings of others around him, how what he does affects them, not to mention the lingering effect after he's already left them in the dust. In regard to being a narcissist, he's beyond selfish. Everything that he does makes it seem like he's doing for the two of them, like him and whoever he's coupled with that week. He would go as far as changing his personality and persona to match whoever he was dating. He smoothly talks to these women. He becomes their dream man. He wants to be wanted and be admired. And it does seem to all go back to how he was raised during those impressionable years. Smith will go on to have anywhere between 8 to 10, maybe 11 marriages all at the same time. Several engagements, numerous girlfriends. Again, all of them are overlapping with one another. He had come up with different business ventures. He had like 10 social security numbers, close to 60 different addresses that he would only stay at one for like a couple weeks or a month or something like that before moving on. This guy had multiple phones and phone numbers, and I do kind of give him props for keeping up with it all, because it's kind of impressive that he juggled all this so well.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
While watching Love Fraud, he's shown on camera so often, and when he is, he's like, he's always on the phone. He's always walking around and talking to somebody, whoever his, you know, flavor of the week is.
Con artist, man.
It's, like I said, it's kind of impressive. I'm going to jump a little bit into the blog first. It was created by Lisa Litton in 2014, and I think she was wife number 6. Lisa married Smith in 2012, and she hasn't been able to legally dissolve or annul the marriage as of 2017. I don't know if it's had any progression since then. Lisa left Smith just months after their marriage when she learned she wasn't his only wife. Now, I went through every post and comment, and I was trying to follow it the best I could. The last post to the blog was August 20th, 2020, which was just a week before the very first episode of Love Fraud aired. And of course, then Love Fraud was one episode a week for the next month. The very first post is May 4th. May the 4th
be with you.
2014.
It is. Dang, so 6 years before.
Yeah.
And so you were getting confused with all the years, like the right timeline, I guess.
And it wasn't until later that I discovered that they didn't start following him until.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wild.
Yeah. That's why I was like, what is going on here? And I was trying to read. What?
Back and forth.
Oh my gosh. I was like, what the hell? So the first post addresses Smith directly, and it's a plea to do what is right. She wants the title to a Jetta that they bought together because he's not making payments on them. She called him out for being married to a Jennifer, even though he had told Lisa that he hadn't been married or wasn't married anymore and could give her proof of a divorce, which, of course, he never did. Shocker. She herself did the research and found that he never divorced any of his wives, and he was currently engaged to another woman named Diana. And then the comments start, you know, on that very first post. And for the most part, anyone that does comment on any of the blog posts are going to be anonymous, or they use like the city name they're in, just something to indicate that they know something about Smith.
Is this something he could have read back then too?
Oh, absolutely. He does, I think, eventually come across it because of one of the women.
Does he ever make a post in it?
So the women never directly or indirectly answer questions to each other. They're more like giving hints about what's going on. That way, if he's posing as somebody, they're not giving too much away. Because that's what they were afraid of, is that he would be one of these people. And they're like, how do we know you're not Smith?
Right.
Gary, that former BFF from high school, said that Smith had dated one of his best friends and took her money. And that was March 2015. So the blog had been up for a few months before anybody really started coming across it and commenting. Another woman named Michelle said in August 2015 that he took $2,000 in cash from her. After combining their phone plans, he left her a $400 bill. He pawned her car title. He faked a brain tumor and a heart attack.
Bro.
Dude. Michelle acknowledged that Smith dated her and another woman named Candy at the same time.
He's like, how extreme can I go and still get away with it?
Right.
It's crazy.
Right. Michelle also said that he was dating this other girl named Jean, and he was heartbroken because she died in a car crash. But then Michelle found out that he married this same girlfriend, Jean, like she resurrected from the dead, and she was becoming a part of his apartment company that he had. She was like VP of operations or something.
Did he ever have kids with any of these women?
I think he did. It never came out anywhere really, but I feel like there was a suggestion that one of them did have kids with him. So after that first blog post, that means Michelle and Gary must have Googled his name and then came across it, and then it's just been a whirlwind ever since. And the blog posts are a little sporadic. They aren't made weekly or monthly. There'll be some that are like months back to back and things fizzle down because no one knows anything new about Smith or where he could be. Or maybe a new girlfriend or fiance or wife discovers the blog, then they'll comment on a post. And I'm not obviously going to do like a touch on every single one. We'd be here forever. But if one pertained to the story, to help you look at his character, I was going to include it. Like, for instance, on August 24th, 2015, there's a blog post titled Prestige Corporate Living. And I mentioned just a second ago, his resurrected girlfriend slash wife, Jean, became VP of operations of this company for him. And Prestige Corporate Living LLC became Prestige Corporate Living Worldwide LLC.
Really? Prestige Worldwide?
Uh-huh.
Step Brothers?
Oh, is that what that is?
Prestige Worldwide.
Wow. I have no idea. So these are his apartment companies, kind of. Smith didn't just victimize women who he was pretty much faking a relationship with, but also his tenants. Smith and PCLW, quote-unquote, collected rent from tenants, but the money wasn't going towards the property, meaning these people thought they were paying their bills, and then they get an eviction notice and have no idea what's going on. Vendors of the complexes weren't getting paid for their services. In 2015, there were at least five lawsuits against Prestige Corporate Living Worldwide by Village West Apartments, another lawsuit by Briar Cliff City Apartments. So it sounds like Prestige Corporate Living Worldwide rented out apartments in these complexes, marketed them as corporate apartments, making them sound more appealing. The residents would rent from them and pay monthly through PCLW, but Smith would pocket that money instead of giving it back to the complexes. He was due to be in court on multiple occasions, but always had some excuse why he couldn't show. One excuse was that his stepsister had been in a car wreck. But lo and behold, someone reached out to her and she was sitting at work and was like, nope, never been in a car wreck. I'm just fine. At one point, Smith tries to dabble back in this line of work and called his short-lived company Kansas City Short-Term Stay. And of course, it flopped too. And the whole situation sucked, especially for everyone involved. The residents in those apartments had a small taste of what the women in Smith's lives went through. What really got the ball rolling in the search for Smith were his warrants. He had one out of Iowa and the other one was out of Kansas. Let's start in Iowa. By the way, this man has been all over Iowa, Kansas, Texas, Missouri, Tennessee, Georgia, and who knows where else.
I've been everywhere, man.
Smith was booked on September 3rd, 2015 in Des Moines, Iowa for a charge of domestic abuse and assault. And it was his first offense. He was 44 at the time. There's also an order of protection attached. Sandy, the victim, she and Smith got engaged after dating for just a few months, and she said that she refused to combine their checking accounts. Smith becomes enraged. She's not comfortable. When she told him she was going to leave him, he threw her down. He's kicking her. He uses an iPad and hits her in the head with it. She said that he came at her and she's all balled up on the floor and she kept thinking to herself, he can kill me if he keeps on. And she does show pictures that were taken after the incident. She's bruised up, black eye. She's got what look like finger impressions around her waist where he's grabbed her. Sandy later learned from arresting officers that evening that Smith had just married some other woman in Vegas just days before. That woman being Jean, the resurrected girlfriend from the car wreck, and Jean would become wife either 8 or 9. He pleads guilty. He's put on probation. And this is what's really funny to me. He called Jean and asked her to come get him out of jail. He told her that he got jumped, but he's the one who ended up in trouble. But then she hears the charges of domestic abuse, and she's like, huh? She told the arresting officer, well, that can't be because I'm his wife and he didn't beat me.
Oh, my gosh.
Sandy contacted Jean shortly after all this and told her what happened. And she was like, hey, you need to go read this blog about your man. So now Sandy has informed Jean of Smith's ways. And now Jean's on the blog updating herself. And if you wonder how Smith meets all of these women, what do you think?
Tinder.
Ding, ding, ding. Yeah. Dating apps.
Boom.
Tinder, Bumble, Plenty of Fish. He was on probably every single one out there. And his profiles are basic. He talks about himself just enough to get women interested. He likes to become whatever girl he's honed in on, like her dream man. So I figure when him and a lady are talking and he learns more about her, he'll mention, oh, I like that too. That, or he finds somebody and they match and he just goes creeping on their profile, like on Facebook or something like that. Anything to give him information on his latest con. And he tells different women different things. Like, for instance, he's been a pro water skier, a lawyer, a chef, a pilot, a businessman, a musician. He just conforms. She says, I love to cook. He says, oh, I do too. Once he has a woman hooked, he moves fast. He goes from dating to staying the night to moving in together to becoming engaged and, in worst case scenario, married. And all of it's done within weeks to just a couple months' time.
And then is he taking all their money and running or what?
Yep.
Yep.
Whatever he can. He just finds your everyday hardworking woman, you know, single mom looking for an adventure or, you know, this one woman, I'll talk about her later. She talks about after she got divorced, she was kind of like a hermit and didn't want to get out. And he brought her back to life. He was exciting. Tracy, one of the women that swiped right on Smith, she's featured in Love Fraud, said that his profile was so appealing to her. In it, he stated that he was an entrepreneur with his pilot's license and he was religious. For their first date, he and Tracy went on a motorcycle ride. She said for the first time in a long time, she felt alive.
You gonna trust a random ass guy to get on the motorcycle with on the first date?
Mm-hmm. She was a single mom who did everything for her kids. But thankfully, it was the love that she has for her kids. They have that same love back. They want to protect her. And that saved her from getting too deep with Smith.
They're telling her, like, this dude's sketchy. You better watch Kinda. Out.
So one of her daughters, Kayla, loved seeing her mom happy. But things were a little off to her, and they were moving really fast. Smith was staying over often. There was the talk of an engagement. And to Tracy, that wasn't fast. She's in her 40s. Life's not going to slow down for her anytime soon. Smith brought up the idea of getting married. But over the span of just days, he kept insisting they move the date up. And to her daughter, Kayla, you know, that's kind of weird. Why is he rushing? And then his attitude started changing. So one night, Kayla sneaks to his truck out front and she starts digging. And I was like, you go, girl. She finds these pill bottles with the labels torn off. So she's like, oh my God, he's a junkie. There's something up with that. Then she sees paperwork with all of these different names on them. So she Googles those names and she finds the blog. And she immediately calls her mom and she's like, you need to get home right now.
Dude.
Go, Kayla.
That's impressive. Another future detective.
Ellen is another woman that's on the show. She's from Arkansas, but she meets Smith at a restaurant in Wichita, Kansas. And I'm also assuming that Tracy is either in Wichita or Kansas City also, because the majority of this is all Kansas. She said that Smith wined and dined her every night, said all the right things. They too go on a motorcycle ride, which she loves motorcycles. So I don't know if he used that ruse too, because maybe it's in her profile too. And she's like, or he's like, oh, that's convenient. I've got a Harley.
Yeah. He was probably like, well, it worked once. I might as well try it again with this another girl.
She moved in with Smith after 3 weeks of dating because he tells her that he needs to see her every morning. He wants to wake up to her.
Jesus.
A couple weeks later, Smith told Ellen that he had the best idea to move to the tropical paradise of Belize. He says the cost of living is cheap. It's like $400 a month and they could have an oceanfront property.
Let's go.
I know. They should also get married there. Smith looked up houses. He did all the footwork.
This was after 3 weeks?
After 3, maybe 4 weeks, yeah. He went ahead and bought jet skis, ATVs, and Ellen is excited. He's excited. But in the midst of all of that excitement, he casually says, did you know that you can't get extradited from Belize? Ellen's like, well, that's a weird remark.
Is that where Diddy went?
Oh, dude, I don't know. Next up on the show, we get to meet Sabrina. Sabrina is a hairstylist. And Smith would come in for a haircut sitting in her chair. He asked her out several times before she finally said yes. Right from the get-go, he wasn't like other men she dated, or so she thought. Smith gave her gifts. He befriended her dog, like bringing the puppy like a burger from McDonald's or something, you know?
Always got to get in good with the dog first.
You damn right.
Just ask Derby.
Well, I used to always get her little Wendy's burgers. That's probably why she got so fat.
Oof.
Now look at her.
Thick girl.
Mm-hmm.
Now she eats carrots.
That's right. She loves a good carrot. I think she was different to him because he actually had to work for her. Unlike some of the others, she didn't instantly just gravitate towards him.
So she was playing hard to get?
Yes. So maybe that is why he got her name tattooed on his body?
What?
1 month of dating and he gets Sabrina put above an existing anchor he has on his shoulder.
After like 9 women, he finally gets a tattoo of a...
God, I don't know.
Or he's just going to cover up each one with a different name.
Dude, I don't know. But this is where it gets kind of sketch. So out of the blue, he wants to take her on a cruise. Okay. Then she learns that maybe she was just a pawn in his scheme because she found out that he had gotten a $250,000 life insurance policy on her. So Sabrina thought he was going to throw her off the boat and then use that tattoo as a symbol of love. Be like, I would never hurt her. Look, her name's on my body.
Probably. So she figured that out and didn't go on the cruise?
He got sick. And so they couldn't go on the cruise.
What?
So his plan fell through. And when that happened, he starts treating her differently, acting different. So she leaves him. But not before he racked up so much debt. He maxed out her credit cards, drained their account. She lost everything and had to move back in with her parents. Sabrina is the one to file charges for identity theft. She told police that he had taken out a credit application in her name. She thought that he must have taken her driver's license while she was sleeping and copied it to gain information for this form and then forged her signature. Smith bought 2 cars, opened new credit cards, and then had cable service put in at 4 apartments. She said in one of the episodes, the best way to get over a guy is revenge, not therapy, not crying over it to your friends. In February 2017, Smith was charged with identity theft and forgery in Johnson County, Kansas. He pled guilty to that identity theft, and the forgery charge got dropped. He spent 10 months in jail. When he gets out of jail, this is the time that the crew of Love Fraud gets involved. The creators slash directors Heidi Ewing and Rachel Grady have been looking for a subject for their new series, and they wanted to do something about con artists. And one of their producers on the team found the blog. They started filming the show in December of 2017. That was the tidbit I finally found out after looking and trying to figure out a timeline for all this crap.
Chaos. Anarchy.
The Love Fraud team will follow Smith for the next year with the help of a bounty hunter named Carla Campbell, who takes the job pro bono. Over the course of this year, the directors are so invested and they're so appalled by Smith that they will personally hire private detectives to help find this man. What was the driving force for the Love Fraud team and Carla and the women was the fact that Smith was a fugitive. He had skipped out on his probation when he failed to appear and pay fines. The prosecutor for his case was great. She was the one that asked for the highest bond possible, and because she had heard all about Smith, put out a nationwide warrant on him. Except no one was looking for him. He was a small fish in law enforcement's eyes. Everyone involved felt like it was their duty to find him and stop him from adding even more women to his list of victims. And I think that it was the Love Fraud crew that came across Carly Campbell, bounty hunter out of Kansas City. And I freaking loved Carla. She was amazing. She was a no-nonsense, cussed up a storm, chain-smoking badass that carries a gun. She's an older lady, too.
I feel like bounty hunters usually are.
Dude, I loved her. Loved her. After she found out everything that Smith has done to these women, she takes the case pro bono, like I said just a second ago. She herself had a history with an abusive boyfriend. She said, I can't stand men who abuse women in any shape or form. And she had a lot of great quotes throughout the series. This one in particular will tell you a lot about her. It goes, quote, I will kill anyone who touches me again. So if Richard Scott Smith came in and robbed me like he did these women, I'd be in prison. I'd slit his throat, watch him bleed to death, and then admit to doing it because I'm not letting him do that to anyone else, end quote.
You go, girl.
Mm-hmm. Another good quote by her was, I can hear her say it, so funny, was, quote, he looks like a dumbass, but he's not, end quote. Carla saw what he was up to. He married these women to get into their pockets legally. Everything they had is now theirs, making it community property.
And the one that wouldn't let him do it, he beat up pretty much.
Yeah. She also called him a nickel and dime con man because he went after women who did just, you know, normal jobs, 9 to 5, nothing fancy. He wasn't out there making millions, a fortune off these women. He would take just enough that he would need to move on to the next. And I told you this, I think last night or earlier, that the one thing that made me really love Carla more was her activities, her daily activity. Yes. So Carla on the series says that one of her favorite things to do to relax was these little diamond art pictures. And it made me think about Colleen.
Yes.
Because that was her favorite thing to do. And I do think about Colleen all the time when you upload episodes. Because she would listen to them as soon as they dropped. And then she would instantly message us about her thoughts and what was going on with her.
Like bright and early in the morning.
Yes.
Boom.
And if for those listening, Colleen was one of our listeners that unfortunately committed suicide. It'll be a year in July.
Yeah, she was one of the OGs too.
She was. She seemed like a great woman. It's very sad. Over time, with more exposure to what was going on with all these women involved and Carla and love fraud, more and more women were coming forward and they were joining in. I want to say that the Love Fraud crew spoke to at least 30 women that Smith had dated. It was because all of them are now coming together because they're all pissed off. They want to catch this guy. Months would pass and there'd be no new word on Smith's whereabouts until someone would go on the blog and mention either dating him or seeing him with a woman. So all this time is going by. No one's heard anything new. And then Carla with a K, so not Carla the badass bounty hunter. So I'm going to say Carla with a K when I talk about her. Carla with a K is mentioned on this blog after months of silence. And she is his latest girlfriend in Wichita, which is one of the reasons they had trouble finding him. They were looking in Kansas City. And he'd already moved to a different area. Carla with a K was a married mother. She was married to her husband, Jim, for 40 years. And she must have just kind of reached that point in her life that she was like kind of looking for something. You know, she wanted a little more excitement, a way to let loose. And she discovered karaoke. When she was singing karaoke, she met Smith at one of the many bars. There's this one called Shots.
Shot, 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 shot. Everybody.
Smith did what he always did and swept Carla with a K off her feet.
On her motorcycle. His motorcycle.
I don't know if he did that or not with this one. Maybe he sold it for whatever. This woman went and cleared out her husband's 401k and ran off with Smith.
Bro.
She called her husband, Jim, and said, I want a divorce. When she did that, Jim was like, something's weird. So he gets in his car and he goes to the bank, only to find $80 left in his account. Carlo with a K had always wanted to have a restaurant or some kind of business of her own. And somehow Smith convinced her to go for it. The couple opened a Crab Kings, Crab with a K, Kings with a Z, in February 2018. Jim would end up getting a call from an unknown number, and it was one of Smith's past girlfriends, and she tells him all about Smith, letting him know that Smith only wants your money and that Jim could save his marriage. There was a chance. And Smith was no different running that restaurant as he'd done with any of his other businesses, like the apartments, you know. He was around when they were hiring the staff, and then he'd pop in on and off that first month, and then he was gone from the area. And it was weird. Anytime they would do like a staff building or a staff meeting or just have a good time, you know, people are taking pictures and he would hide. Like he didn't want his picture taken.
I'm surprised he was even there for that stuff.
Yeah. And he didn't want to hang out with the staff like Carla with a K did. The employees thought it was weird, but you know, whatever. Carla with K was the opposite of him. She was happy and enthusiastic. Smith did start to separate himself from Carla with a K. And when he was doing that, he was sweet talking one of the employees because he was looking for his next, you know, lady. He was leaving her I love you messages after their first date. But thank God this woman was like, the fuck is this guy doing? But you can probably guess what happened next with the restaurant. Smith cleared out the accounts. Paychecks bounced. Vendors weren't being paid. Carla with a K somehow stayed afloat for almost another year. And then the pandemic hit. And of course, Carla closed the doors. On a more positive note, after Smith was long gone, Jim and Carla made up. Jim had said that he would have killed that man for Carla. And he even shows himself loading a gun in the car on the show. I was like, hell yeah. He never gave up on his wife. At the end of the second episode, it shows Carla with a K singing karaoke. It's some lovey-dovey song, probably from like the 80s or something. And Jim is sitting at the bar and he's crying, and then it pans to them slow dancing. So they get back together. And even though he does get his wife back, Jim is still on patrol to find this man. He wants to do his part and help and get revenge.
He became a bounty hunter.
Dude, he looked like it. He was scraggly with the beard and long hair. I could see him doing it. Jim obviously knows about the blog. And he goes on there and he sees that Smith is possibly still in Wichita with his new girlfriend, but only for another week. They're about to leave the country and go to Belize. So if you remember at the beginning, I talked about one of the women being interviewed, Ellen. She told the crew that Smith wanted to move to Belize with her. So this is where Ellen comes into play, even though I've already talked about her. Thankfully, Ellen was smart enough not to quit her job and run away with him. When everything felt funky, she started to dig into his life and she finds the blog. She's the one that confronted him. And that's probably how he finds out about the blog, if he hadn't already discovered it before then. When she does go to him, he tells her that she needs to talk to a woman named Lee who lives in Knoxville, Tennessee. Lee could reassure Ellen that he was the real deal. Lee did stick up for Smith. She told Ellen that he's a great guy, the whole package, but all it did was convince Ellen that Lee was still in love with this man. And since no one could find Smith at this point, because he had just left, Ellen was pretty sure that he was in Knoxville, Tennessee now with this Lee woman. And Lee had once been engaged to Smith, too. Now that Jean, the resurrected girlfriend slash wife number 8, is on board with the women on the search to find Smith, she takes it upon herself to call Lee in Knoxville to question her if she knows where Smith is. Of course, Lee says, no, I rarely keep up with him. But her answers are kind of off and Jean picks up on it. Lee's very defensive and she mentions that she's not harboring a fugitive, which is curious that she says that, because unless you Googled around on your ex-fiance, how did you know that he's a fugitive unless he told you himself? So, of course, Jean's like, this girl's lying. The directors reach out to private detectives. Their names are Steve and Jason. They are in the Knoxville area and they hire them to look for Smith because everyone else is in Kansas right now. They start by following Lee around because she's the key if he's in the area. Smith and Lee had been engaged 10 years prior. Her story is similar to the other women. She was the single, recently divorced, kept up in her home until Smith comes around and breaks her shell open and she's alive once again. She says that when they broke up, it was mutual and they'd maintain a friendship over all the years. Lee couldn't believe all this crap these women were writing about Smith on the blog. She's adamant that he is not the man that they're accusing him to be because Smith just wants love and wants to be a part of a family. So, you know, maybe he wasn't quite up to his ways a decade ago. Lee says that Smith was close to her family. Smith went boating with her father, Oscar. Her father called him the son-in-law he never had. Love Fraud travels to Knoxville and they start interviewing Lee. She wants her 15 minutes of fame, you know. What she doesn't know is that that's a distraction because she had no idea she's being followed by these PIs. I don't know how much time passed on the show. It's not like they give you a timeline on there either. But one day, this older model of a RAV4 from like 2008 pulls up to the apartment complex that Lee lives in and parks next to her car. Somebody gets out and goes inside. It's kind of at a distance because the PIs are in their own cars off the street with little camcorders, you know. The next thing that happens is Smith walking out of the building dressed in a black polo and jeans, and he gets into that RAV4. When he comes into view, like when he leaves the building, you hear, like the camera lady from Love Fraud is like, oh my God, there he is.
It's
like
him.
Right. Yes. They are all like shocked, but not all, but they're not surprised at the same time. The PI start to follow this RAV4 and he ends up at this boat and RV dealership that does boat repos. And he just looks like he's an employee working there. After work, he doesn't go back to Lee's apartment. Instead, he drives to a lake in town where Lee's dad has a houseboat. And when he gets there, Lee's dad is leaving. Smith stayed, and it looked like he's working on the boat, cleaning it. Of course, he's on the phone like he was in Kansas City, you know, just talking to God knows who. He looks suspicious, though, when he's out there all by himself. And this will come into play later, him being alone at the boat. Obviously, Lee's dad didn't mind that he was out there because, again, he adored Smith. That RAV4 that he's driving around was Lee's dad's spare car. There is somebody that's involved with this whole thing, this love triangle. Well, completes the love triangle. It's Lee, Smith, and then her actual boyfriend of 3 years, Daryl. And things were going great for Lee and Daryl, and then Smith pops back in. And the next thing he knows, Lee's like, I don't think we're meant to be together. And he's like, I knew it. He just knew something wasn't right with Smith. He could just feel that he was bad news. And of course, Lee and Lee's dad are just infatuated with this man that they're not listening to Daryl. And Daryl's like, y'all are dumbasses. Now that there's been confirmation that he's indeed in Knoxville, the Love Frog crew now completes their journey there. They're with the Knoxville PIs and they are following Smith, getting information together, figuring out a schedule and routine before they get the police involved. The PIs are afraid that if they get in too quickly, they're going to scare him off. As they're following Smith one day, one of the PIs noticed something. Smith never knew he was being followed because he's very oblivious to the world around him. He's so self-involved that they noticed his rearview mirrors and side mirrors are angled more towards himself and not the road. These PIs record Smith going into different, like, Boost Mobile or Cricket, and he's buying burner phones, you know, multiple of them. He's going to different car dealerships. He's going to open houses. So it just looks like Smith is back to his normal self in Tennessee, doing what he did back in Kansas. They follow him to a bar, and he is cozying up to some woman that is not Lee, getting drinks. So the Knoxville PIs are giving updates back to the women in Kansas, letting them know that Smith is back to his old ways. He's dating different women within to like a week or week and a half of each other. The women in Kansas just decide, like right then, as they're hearing everything, that they need to try and save as many of these women as they can. Jean says, well, I'm going. And Carla says, I'll be your backup. I'm like, hell yeah, Carla, get it.
Yeah.
Carla and Jean meet up with the Knoxville guys. Bless you.
And that's Carly the bounty hunter.
Carla the bounty hunter, not Carly with a K. And they meet up with the directors and they get together and form a game plan. They know where Smith is. He's staying at this Super 8 motel there in town. They break up into two teams. They park and they watch the motel at different ends and they're waiting. They go ahead and call Knoxville PD to inform them that there is a fugitive staying in their town. They report him. They let dispatch know his name, that he has these warrants. Unfortunately, he leaves before the police can get there. So the Knoxville guys, Heidi, Rachel, Jean, Carla, take matters into their own hands and they start tailing him with dispatch, keeping them up to date of every turn he takes, every exit off the interstate, what he's doing. They follow him all the way to the Westtown Mall in Knoxville. And as they're taking the exit, one of the PIs is like, dude, there's a bunch of unmarked police cars behind us. So they pull off and park and they watch. And in the parking lot of Dillard's, the Knoxville police take Smith into custody. Jump ahead a couple days, week or so. Smith's in court back in Kansas. In the courtroom's gallery sitting and ready to watch the show are several of the women he did wrong. And of course, Carla, the bounty hunter, she is there too. He's there for his probation violation, but the judge allowed for some of the women to speak, let them, you know, vent about the whole situation of what's going on. Sandy, the woman who was beaten with an iPad, asked the court to give him the maximum sentence allowed, which is sadly only 180 days.
Really?
Yep. But, you know, these women are just happy to see him go behind bars. This isn't what he deserved, but the justice system, like I said before, doesn't see him as a big fish. Carla is quoted saying, this is little bullshit to them. Richard Scott Smith served his time and was released. The Love Frog crew did interview him while he was in jail to get his side of things. I only watched part of it because as soon as he starts talking, he makes himself sound like a victim, that he wanted these relationships to be long-term, and he moved fast because he was afraid of losing an incredible woman to somebody else. Like, whatever. He said that he's going to do better, he wants to work on himself, and that he's not afraid to be himself and learn from his mistakes.
Lies.
If only that was the truth. The crew knew his release date and decided to follow him a few more times. After he gets out, they record him living at an apartment complex. And there he is in the pool with the lady, and they're all over each other with some major PDA. Guys, I got like one more paragraph.
We're almost done.
This is why we need to record, like, with the camera, so they can see the shit that goes on in here.
Well, if I try to record, they're just going to stop. Get see? Him. Look.
Get
see
him. It. Ah. Get him.
Go ahead, finish this off.
There isn't much to follow up on, not that I could find. The last update was that he worked for Postmates when everything went to shit during the pandemic. Majority of the articles were up to 2020. So pretty much the show aired and then that was it. I wouldn't be surprised if he's doing the same old thing even years later. Hopefully it's harder for him to pull a fast one because now his face has been out there on national television. Everybody knows his story.
Right.
His actions may have been that of a little fish in a big sea pond of crime, you know. But he did ruin a lot of lives. One woman had debts up to $100,000, others $500,000, $600,000, $750,000. Some escaped without losing much. But they lost more than money. They lost the trust in men, especially in a time in their lives where it's hard to meet somebody and get out there.
Lost a lot of time, too.
Yeah. In sadder news, Carla, the bounty hunter, in 2019, found out she had stage 4 metastasized lung cancer and she would pass away. The last update of hers that I found said April 2023, stating that she had died. And that was a lot, but there's even more out there about this guy.
It was a pretty good summary, though, for sure.
It felt like enough. So that's the story of Richard Scott Smith, the con man of love. And earlier, I said to remember that he worked at a boat repo place, right?
Yeah.
24 hours after his arrest, Lee's dad had a houseboat, the one that Scott was cleaning, right? Was outside all alone. It sank.
Oh, some kind of insurance fraud.
So it seemed that he was trying to pull a fast one on a man who called him his son-in-law that he never had.
It was only a matter of time.
It was. And that when that happened, Oscar, Lee's dad, and Lee finally got to see Smith for who he really was.
Who was it? Daryl?
Daryl tried to tell them.
Yeah, Daryl tried to warn him.
But nope.
Find out the hard way. Good job, love.
Thanks.
That was wild. And
so I'll leave this
short and sweet because, yes, the dogs are getting restless. But
hi, buddy.
Thank y'all for listening. We'll be back again next week. Until then, stay local, shop local.
Murder local. Oh, Mowgli.